We're doing the Ein Yaakov. We're up to page Tes Zayin in the standard editions, Daf Lamed Beis in the Gemara. And we had learned last time that even if a person transgressed 999 times in the same sin, but one time he got it right, so then that speaks up on his behalf. And that's a scary thought, because it means most often we don't get it right even once. Once a person starts going down the path of doing something wrong, so then he has a very hard time to undo it. I'll give you a few easy examples. How many people stand and focus when they say the prayer of Aleinu? That's a simple example. You walk out, you see, half the shul's out the door already, or rolling up their tefillin. And we said that's possibly the most ancient prayer we have. Aleinu was composed by Yoshua bin Nun. People who are accustomed to talking during Kaddish. People who come late to shul have a very hard time ever showing up on time. There are little things that we get into the habit of doing, and then we have a very hard time undoing them. So it says, if you can get it right even once, that carries a great weight in heaven. And that's the way we all start. One of the great failings of our generation is that we expect perfection of ourselves. And when we don't reach perfection, we think it's all or nothing. If I didn't do it all, then I'm a nothing. And that's not true. A person wasn't keeping Shabbos. Then they started keeping Shabbos. So they're not perfect. So sometimes the Yetzer Hara tells us, throw in the towel. This Shabbos you fell, so that's it. You're no good. It's not true. You are good. So this Shabbos you fell. Next Shabbos you'll do better. One of the things we have to remind ourselves is that Hashem is realistic. He knows us. And He understands us. And He doesn't expect us to change overnight. He has patience. So long as we're progressing, and part of progress is a down. You can't progress unless you have ups and downs. That's part of progress. If you take two steps forward and one step back, that's okay. What happens if I take two steps forward and three steps back? Well, that depends. Do I do that every time? Or is it sometimes this and sometimes that? So long as I'm progressing. So that's the way a graph works. We have ups, we have downs. So that's very encouraging here. That 999 times a guy fell, but if he stood up once, so that's going to speak on his behalf in the world to come. Tanya, we're continuing. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, Hilchot Hekdesh Tumot Maasot Enhen Gufei Torah V'Nimseru La'amei Ha'aretz. We have laws of Hekdesh. We have laws of Truma and Meiser, where a person takes off a tithe, the person takes off Truma, the food is now holy. No one knows it. And then Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says they were given over to the common folk, to the layman. You buy an apple, you don't have to think that apple was Hekdesh. Maybe the store owner said, all these apples are designated to the temple, and so they're prohibited, you can't eat them, they're temple property. You don't know, you don't have to worry about it. These are laws which are very serious, and yet they're in everyone's hands. Every person can do this. So I remembered this Gemara a few years ago. Person I knew had lost their job, and so the wife calls up and says, we need a loan. So I always say, if a person needs a loan, they should give collateral. I say, I'm willing to try and find someone who could give a loan. I won't necessarily find anyone, but I'm willing to try, but give collateral, secure the loan if you're asking someone to give a loan. So they say, okay, we have bars of silver, but we want to give them, we'll sell the bars of silver. So at that time, silver was on its way down. They said, we think silver will go back up. I asked, do you want to give it as collateral or do you want to sell it? I might know someone who wants to buy silver. There used to be a student here in the Machon who was into buying silver. So they said they want to sell it. Fine. So I make the shidduch. They meet. I had to leave. It was a Matzei Shabbos. I was on my way out. I make the shidduch. The guy comes in. They bring in their bars of silver. He buys the bars of silver. They leave. He leaves. A few days later, I get a phone call. And they say, the people who sold the silver said, Rabbi, what are we supposed to do? Those bars of silver, we designated them for a sacrifice. When our firstborn son was born, we said there's no temple here, so we cannot give a sacrifice. So we took these bars of silver that we owned, and we said, these bars of silver are designated to the temple for a sacrifice when the temple will be rebuilt. But now we were short on cash, so we sold them. What are we supposed to do now? So that's this Gemara. Technically, that doesn't work.
Have to do that.
Right? That's what you think. So I'm thinking, wait a second. You designated that to the temple. You're not supposed to do that today. That's wrong. It says, after the temple was destroyed, tens of thousands of Romans converted to Judaism, and they wanted to donate, to designate money to buy a sacrifice with when the temple would be rebuilt, and the rabbis forbade it. Because what would happen? You'd have holy money, and eventually people would do just this. They'd get rid of the holy money, right? Eventually you'd say, hey, I have this money sitting around, the temple isn't being rebuilt. If you won't give it away, your kids will give it away. If not your kids, your grandkids. What are you doing? Making money holy. You're saying this money is designated for a sacrifice. That's like a vow. The money now becomes holy. You're not allowed to use it. But you know what? No one knows it. A person pays away, they don't know. This guy came in for the transaction. No one knew. He didn't know. I didn't know. The buyer didn't know. 3 days later, he's already spent the money he got for his silver. And now he's saying, what am I supposed to do? What he's supposed to do is verify before he makes the sale, right? Okay, so that's this. That's when I thought of this Gemara. The Gemara says, the laws of Hegdish is something that's a very, very real part of Torah, and yet it's in the hands of anyone. Anyone can designate something as Hegdish. You're not supposed to. They made a mistake. They shouldn't have done that. But technically anyone could. You could take any object that's your own and designate it to the temple. It's wrong to do it. But we have the power to do that. So this really opens up a very nice topic, because this is the idea of trust. I buy something from someone who's not so learned. Why don't I have to worry? Maybe he designated it to the temple. And here you see, the Gemara is saying it's in the hands of every person. And yet we don't say don't buy a car from someone who's not learned, because maybe he did that. Don't buy silver from someone who's not learned, because maybe they designated when their first son was born for a sacrifice. We don't say that. We say you're allowed to buy things from people, and we're not worried about that. So that's a very nice concept. This goes a step further. There's a story that one of the sages of this century, one of the big halachic authorities, his son was invited for a Shabbos to a friend. No, the other way around. His son invited a friend for a Shabbos meal. So the friend calls up Friday afternoon. He says, my father wants to know which hechsherim do you eat? Which kashrus do you bring into your house? So the father wasn't bothered, even though it's disrespectful. You're talking to someone of that caliber. You're questioning them. So he answered them. And when they hung up the phone, he said to his son, you should know what they did was wrong, because if you go to someone's house and it's a person you can trust, it's a person that keeps Torah and mitzvos normally, so then you're allowed to eat what they serve you, because you're allowed to trust a fellow Jew. And if you come to Shemaim and they say, gee, you know what they served you wasn't kosher, then you have an answer that's perfectly legitimate. Ribbono Shel Olam, you gave us a Torah. In your Torah, you said a Jew can trust a fellow Jew. If it's a Jew that keeps Torah and mitzvos, I'm allowed to trust him. So I was allowed to eat that food. I didn't do any transgression. But what happens when you call up and you start questioning the person? What are you saying? You're saying, I don't trust you. Ah, you don't trust me? Then the question of kashrus in my house is his responsibility, because he took the responsibility. So he said to his son, you should know what they just did was they took the responsibility of kashrut. They don't know, but they basically said, we're not trusting the other party. We're taking the responsibility. And that means when they get to heaven, the food better have been kosher, right? Because they took the responsibility. So again, that's part of the idea here. We have laws that are really serious business in Torah. Hekdesh is serious business. There's a biblical prohibition to eat something that's hekdesh. Truma is punishable with the death penalty. It says if a person eats truma, then it's misa b'dei shamayim. Then in heaven they're going to cause them to die young. So how do we ever buy food from someone who's not so learned? We're not concerned. We trust him that he wouldn't do that to us. Tanya. We're continuing. Last line. Rabbi Natan Omer, Bavo Nedarim Meta Ishto Shel Adam. Scary Gemara. Shneimar Menlecha Shlem Lama Yikach Mishkavcha Mitachtecha. Rabbi Natan says, over the transgression of making vows, a person's wife passes away. as the verse says, why should a person take on a vow? Why, if he can't pay, why should he have his bed, so to speak, his sleeping mate, be taken from beneath him? So that's a reference to his wife. And this is a Gemara that appears often in the Shas, that a person should know. That's why Jacob's wife, Rachel, passes away. Why does Jacob lose Rachel? Why does Rachel die so young? Because Yaakov took on a vow. He said, whatever you give me, Hashem, if I make it back in peace, I will give you a tithe. I will build a place of worship in honor of Hashem. He makes it back to Shechem in peace, and he doesn't do that. So first his daughter is abducted, and then his wife dies. And finally, he turns to Hashem, and Hashem says, what do you want from me? You took on a vow, and you didn't pay. And we're taught that when a person takes on a vow and they don't pay, so then the collateral for a vow is one's own family. Rebbe says, this is why children die when they're young. It's not their transgression. They didn't do anything to deserve it. A minor doesn't have transgressions. The reason is it's the father's transgression. If he took on a vow and he didn't pay, Shneimah, the verse says, Al titen et picha lachtit bisarecha, lama yitzof elukim al kolecha, vechibelt maase yadecha. It says, don't let your mouth cause your flesh to be lost. Why should Hashem be upset at your voice and then destroy the work of your hands? Eizeh hu hen maaseh yadav shel adam. What is the work of your hands in life? Eveh omer banav uvnotav shel adam. That's your children. The average person would say, it's my job, I'm a mechanic. No. The handiwork of your life is your children. That's the greatest mark a person can make on the world. If he leaves behind children that are worthwhile. So that's what Rebbe says. Bavon nedarim banim metim kshem ktanim. Yeah, so that's what it says in halacha. When a child reaches bar mitzvah, what's the blessing we make? Baruch sheptarani monsho shel ze. Blessed is he who has freed me from this one's punishment. Who makes the blessing? Two opinions. One opinion is that the father makes the blessing. I no longer have to deal with punishing him, with educating him. The other opinion says the kid makes the blessing. Thank God, I'm no longer his collateral. I don't have to worry that I'm going to get punished because of him. Baruch sheftarani monsho shel ze. Blessed that freed me from his punishments. Two opinions. Who's making the blessing? Our custom is that the father makes it. But, yeah.
Quick clarification. It's pretty obvious. But one of the reasons that a child could die prematurely or suffer would be this. They are trying to say that at all times children pass on this earlier sufferings because of the sins of the parents. Even if they may not be accountable in this life. You get my point?
I hear what you're saying, right. Right, for sure. For sure, right. This is not saying that's the only reason children would die young. Correct. Correct. Yes?
So we also have a principle from the Rambam that children don't die for their father's sins and fathers don't die for their children's sins?
It's a pasuk. And if you look closely, the pasuk says specific things. Let's see, what does it say? Lo yumtu avot al banim, uvanim lo yumtu al avot, ish b'cheto yumatu. So the verse says it about a chet. It doesn't say it about an avon or a pesha, right? Because it does say, the very next verse says, umshalem avon avot. It says, dor revi'i. It says, four generations can pay the bill for an avon, for a sin that's done on purpose. So that, I'm saying, chet is shkaga, chet is a transgression that's done by mistake, avon is one that's done willfully. So Rashi learns that it depends on whether the kids go in their father's footsteps, but not everyone learns that way. It's a broad topic. You notice, Rebbe said, ba'avon nedarim. He said, in the purposeful transgression of taking vows. Now, the question here is it considered a purposeful transgression because a person should have known better and not taken on the vow? Why did he take on a vow? You want to do something positive, do it. Why are you taking on a vow? Tanu Rabbanan, we have a brisa that was validated by the Academy of Rav Chiya Rav Hoshaya. Bavon nedarim banim metim, diurei Rebbe Elezer Rebbe Shimon. Rebbe Elezer, the son of Rebbe Shimon. Who was that? Rebbe Elezer Rebbe Shimon? Rebbe Elezer Rebbe Shimon was the famous Rebbe Elezer, the son of Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai. Who is Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai? He was the son of the wealthy Yochai. Who is Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai? He was the disciple of Rabbi Akiva. Who is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Whenever you encounter Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah, it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So we have three contemporaries, right? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and who else? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eloi. The two of them are always arguing in Shas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. That's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eloi. And who else? Who else? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eloi, and Rabbi Meir. Okay, so we have three contemporaries. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, we know he spoke out against the Romans, so they wanted to kill him, so he went into hiding. This was after he learned by Rabbi Akiva. He wanted to learn Kabbalah by Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva didn't want to teach him, right? And he said, if you don't tell me, I'll have my father punish you. My father is a wealthy baron. And Rabbi Akiva tells him, Yotzer me'asher hegel rotze linok, haparoa rotze leanik. More than the calf wants to nurse, the mother cow wants to give her milk. What, you think I don't want to teach you? Of course I want to teach you. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai went into hiding with his son Rabbi Elazar. And when they came out of the cave, they both looked at the world and couldn't figure out why are people dealing with the mundane, right? Why are people busy with so many things that are irrelevant? They're not eternal. They could be doing Torah. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, they took another year in the cave, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai seems to have been cured because he comes out and he can see the positive in everything. And Rabbi Elazar still thinks everything's terrible. But then Rabbi Elazar grows. Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, becomes a big, big, big rabbi. It says that what no one else could permit, he could permit. He knew so much. And he was a tremendous mekel. It says he ended up joining forces with the Romans. They appointed him as a governor. And even though he was a big rabbi, they appointed him as a judge. And he would execute even Jews. And the rabbis asked him, how dare you execute Jews? And he said, the Jews that deserve to die. And they said, who said? And he said, I said. So he said, I'll prove it to you. And he did a small operation on himself and he took out a bunch of his own fat. He was a huge guy, very, very big man. In those days, they believed that was healthy. Maybe it was. And he took his fat and he said, we're going to leave this out in the sun and we're going to see if any worms can touch this. Does it ever go bad? And they left it in the sun. It never went bad. It stayed fresh. He said to them, you see, when I get buried, the worms won't touch me because I don't have any sins. I didn't do anything wrong. I've never killed a person who didn't deserve to die. I've never done anything. I haven't done anything wrong. And the Talmud tells us fascinating stories about him. It says there was once tens of questions that came to the academy and no one could permit them. And he permitted them all. And they said, do you doubt any one of them? They were all questions of family purity. And he walked into the academy and he said, this is permissible, that's permissible, the next one's permissible. He permitted them all. So they asked him, don't you worry that maybe you got one wrong? He said, count how many questions I permitted today. If I'm right, every one of them will give birth to a male in 9 months. Every one of them will have a boy in 9 months. And every one of them had a boy in 9 months. So it says he was a huge giant, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. So back to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, back to our Gemara. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, he says, again, who's his father? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is, anytime you encounter Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah, it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He's the disciple of Rabbi Akiva. Who are his contemporaries? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eloi, and Rabbi Meir. Okay, so now his son, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says, same idea. Over the transgression of vows, children die. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Omer. It's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, that's Rabbi Yehuda the prince, that's a few generations later. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was two or three generations later. He merited to see Rabbi Meir, but he was a few generations later. He says, Bavon Bitul Torah. You know why people lose their children? Because they waste time, and they could have been learning Torah at that time. That's what's called Bitul Torah. We quoted a source over the transgression of vows. What source supports this idea that bitul Torah could cause one to lose their kids? Shneimar, the verse says, Hashem says, have I hit your kids for nothing? The reason is, musar lo lakachu, because you as parents didn't take the time to learn to be ethical people. So Hashem says, it wasn't for nothing. You were responsible to have learned more. Rav Nachman Meir Yitzchak Amar Lamad Amar Bavon Darim Nami Mehachal Hashav Viketi Ibnechem Al Iskei Shav. Rav Nachman Meir Yitzchak says this verse can also be the source for the idea of false vows, because the word Shav could also mean over over saying a falsehood. Let's pause here. We'll pick up here Bezat Shem next week. We got 3 more minutes, so we'll do a little bit of Chazanish. Give me just 1 second. I'm sorry to cut you off. Let's just summarize what we saw today before we shut down. We said even if a person has 999 sins, but he's done it right once, that has a great voice in heaven. We said that the laws of Hektish, Truma, and Meiser, even though they are prime laws, they're in the hands of the common folk. We said over the transgression of a false vow, one could lose one's wife, and one could lose one's children. And we discussed the blessing of Baruch Shepterani Monsho Shel Zeh. And then we said that for the transgression of wasting time and annulling the ability to learn Torah when a person should really be learning, that's another reason why a person could lose, God forbid, one could lose one's children.